This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio or at venues around the city, and we get to listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear those songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes, and you might even find your next favorite artist or band. And if you like what you hear, make sure that you rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Zopa. I'm Megan Suma, and I'm here with host Paul Cavalcante at WFUV. Paul, this was such a cool session. We had the trio Zopa in, which is kind of led at the helm by Michael Imperioli, who many of our listeners will know from The Sopranos, his long career in film and television. Pretty recently, he was in the second season of White Lotus. And in this arena and on this stage, he's singing and playing guitar in this project, Zopa. So talk to me a little bit about the music these guys are making. They're a real, like, New York City band made from and of New York.
Absolutely. And it's interesting that Michael started out in the suburbs and then really became a dedicated, you know, living in New York, New Yorker. The other guys are mainly Upper West Side. And there's a lot of New York cred in terms of the musical influences that they draw from. They wear that on their sleeves. You know, they want you to think of the Dolls and the Velvet Underground and all that music that would have been playing in clubs when they were, you know, infants. I mean, they kind of missed that era, but they're making up for lost time. So you're going to hear a little bit of shoegaze. You're going to hear a lot of melody and what I framed in the conversation as jazz space. They give enough breathing room so that, for example, their covers of a couple of Velvet Underground or Lou Reed things really work because Lou wanted you to listen deeply into the music and live in the space. And so they're not so tight as to be claustrophobic. Their songs stretch out and soar. And let me tell you about them. Right up front, A Still Life, to be followed by Love and Other Forms of Violence. And then a medley of Lou Reed things, Ocean and Heroin.
Okay, great. Let's get into it. A Still Life, live in Studio A. It's FUV Live Sessions.
In my life. to life gathers force, sending you off on another course. Nothing without a compass, without Sherpa, without us. Frozen by the fireside, watching it go, watching it die. Still alive. So I will stay a thousand miles away. What good's the honor? I'm left for one day. Point me to Shambhala. Put me right on your map. Maybe I'll just stay here. Hands folded in my
live in studio, AFUV Live with Zopa, the song A Still Life, the new album by Zopa, Diamond Vehicle, the voice, Michael Imperioli, also guitarist. And we have today on bass and also playing keyboards and vocals on the recording, Elijah Amatin and Olmo Tai, drums and vocals. Together, these men are Zopa. Welcome to WFUV.
Thanks for having us.
Now, Michael is kind of hard to miss from so many credits visually, but we're just listening to him today sing. How did you guys connect with each other in the first place?
I was in a movie with Michael when I was 8, and then he ran into my brother years later and asked what I was up to, and my brother told him I was playing drums, so he came and got me.
That's an amazing life story. So you had your eye on the kid. He had promise.
He was as a young kid, he was a very intense actor and had to do some really demanding stuff for a kid, and he handled himself very well. And his brother was in the movie as well. His brother was 10 years older than you, right?
Yeah.
And his brother and I became friends. And did a play together after. His brother went into music, Michael Tai, and played with Jeff Buckley.
Wow.
And I started following him and what he was doing a bit, and we ran into each other at a party. And at the time, I wanted to play with a drummer. And then we started playing, and Olmo knew Elijah from school, right?
From the west side of Manhattan. We grew up together, basically in the same neighborhood. More or less, yeah. And we started playing together in high school.
So what music really fired you up at a certain age? You know, I mean, was there a tipping point? Everybody hears the hits on the radio, but what was the first thing that became like an obsession?
I loved Fresh by Sly and the Family Stone. I thought that one was really special because all the bass and the drums together, each song had its own vibe and it was all so warm. And then you add the edginess of Sly on top of it. It was that really, I would just fall asleep listening to it a lot.
Mm. And
Early on, I think probably like, you know, Led Zeppelin, just, you know, Kashmir when you're 8 or 9 years old is sort of mind-blowing.
And then when you get to 14 or 15, Kashmir serves an entirely different purpose. And that's the point where Michael Imperioli enters the picture, discovering not only his abilities to perform as an actor, but also loving music. Michael, interestingly, you grew up in your early life in Mount Vernon where there was a club. Maybe it was legend to you, but the Left Bank.
Yeah, no, I know that.
And this place,
I've been there. Yeah.
You did it.
Yeah.
I mean, the Clash played there, yeah. The Police.
Ramones.
The Ramones. They all had their moment. And for you, it was life in the burbs. But then you came down because you decided to go to school in the city, study acting seriously. So take us on a little part of that early journey.
Yeah, I started taking classes at Lee Strasberg Institute. And a few months later, I took classes at Fordham Lincoln Center. I took a literature class as I was thinking about going to college. But I didn't wind up doing it. But I did do 3 plays at Fordham Lincoln Center later when my friend was going there and he was involved in theater. So they kind of let, I was hanging around there a lot and they just let me do some plays. So I did 3 plays at the Studio Theater at Fordham. But there was a student in my acting class who was a DJ prior to his acting school. Stint, and he was at Boston College. He was a DJ there.
Emerson.
So he was really into BC.
Oh, BC.
He was really into the post-punk, and BC kind of brought bands and put them, you know, in clubs there. So he was really, he met all these bands that were coming to America, coming to Boston in the early 80s, like Echo and the Bunnymen and Psychedelic Furs and REM. And he turned me on to a lot of those bands that I didn't really know them. And we started a band that was kind of in the no wave genre without a singer. And I just started learning to play guitar. I had an acoustic, a nylon string, and I bought a pickup that I glued on and plugged it in and started messing with the amplifier. That's how I started playing guitar.
And
that's kind of what I still do.
You were involved in a group that was an offshoot of the Feelies called Wild Carnation. That's, and that's kind of, you know, a Jersey classic, but in a different lane of music than we think of, you know, down the shore music. Yeah. Not at all that.
Yeah, that was in 1990. So that band I sang in, so Chris O'Donovan and Rich Barnes, they were involved in a band called Speed the Plow, which also had some had someone from the Feelies. It was part of that scene, like Maxwell's and Hoboken. And we wrote a bunch of songs. I was just singing with them. And then I had to leave the country for a while for a movie. And it was quite a long time. And they were ready to, like, record and stuff. And I was just on the fence. And I wasn't very secure about what I was doing at the time. And I was a little bit confused, so... They brought in a woman named Brenda Souter, who was in the Feelies, and they became Wild Carnation. We didn't have a name. And some of the songs that we made, we have demos of, but they did with Brenda, different lyrics, but the same songs, and that's on their first album. But they're the two of them were really great musicians. They were really fun to play with. And then 2006, we started Zopa.
Yeah, I was going to say, you really got the records together like about 2020 or so, but the band had been in kind of workshop mode for a while. And by this point, Michael had, you know, so much under your belt with so many projects. It was maybe the last year of The Sopranos.
The last 2 years. Yeah.
Was movies left and right. And that's a world, but then music is a world. And how was that balancing act? Did you feel a kind of a relief to be able to segue into this other lane of show business and just put your music hat on and be in your music headspace?
You know, it was really because the three of us connected as, you know, friends and musically. And from the beginning, there was a connection and a spark. And we wrote a lot of songs really quickly together and started playing live. You know, our first show was in Lisbon in Portugal. We had a friend who had a music club there, and I was there doing a movie, and then they came over and we played our first show. Just started doing shows right away and played a lot of shows in every club in New York around that time. And we did a little East Coast tour with another band. And that was the early first 2 years. And just kept going, you know, just enjoying it more and more, and started recording. We recorded an EP 2008 that came out like 2 years ago. And then the first album we recorded in like 2011 that Elijah produced, but we didn't release it till like the pandemic.
Well, we're going to hear Elijah and Olmo and Michael together as Zopa with another song coming out of this new record called Diamond Vehicle. Set us up for love and other forms of violence. Is this a PG-13 song?
The lyrics are stories about people that I knew a really long time ago when I was a teenager. You know, it's just something we started jamming on musically, and it, often it happens very spontaneously that a groove we really like and it turns into a song. So a lot of the songs come out of practice. Elijah co-produced the album with John in Yellow, who's produced a lot of really great records over the years.
All right, so practice makes perfect for love and other forms of violence. It's Zopa, live in Studio A for FUV.
Chosen by the river, and so faded to walk alone, mindful of all the dangers, to think that got him where he would know. Never been a fan. Swollen for his refusal to see all the hatred hiding under the tree. Crooked as the crow flies,
Love and Other Forms of Violence. It is a new song by Zopa, who are not a new band. Singer and guitarist Michael Imperioli was telling us about how this group has really been together since 2006. And our Studio A session once again is featuring Elijah Amatin on bass today and Olmo Tai drums. Michael is singing and playing guitar. It's a tight trio. You guys definitely wear your influences on your sleeve, but you're doing something else. There is a less dense quality, I think, to Zopa's music than, let's say, some of the 90s shoegaze that you're influenced by, or some of the, you know, real downtown New York bands of your. I think that there's a distinct New York accent to this band, but you're giving it a little bit of jazz space. And I know that Michael has got a feel for jazz because you've been involved with the Jazz Foundation of America, and it's just another world that you may not, you know, splash around in that pool, but there are elements of it that are even, you know, familiarizing with Zopa. So tell me about that kind of, you know, stirring that pot of music to make this band sound as original as it does.
Well, yeah, it's definitely a New York sound. I don't think we could ever separate ourselves from that growing up here. It's a little bit of chaos in the song structure. It's the sound of the city.
You've got the sound of the city.
Thank you.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please. There's money in that, man.
Early on, Elijah was like, "Just do, so, what are you gonna do in this part?" And I was like, "I don't know. I'll do something though." And he's like, "But I have to." And I was like, "You don't have to know necessarily. It'll be in time, and we can do it."
So you find the boundaries.
Yeah, try not to have any rules, and then hopefully you can bring something that you weren't expecting or that doesn't sound staid.
And Michael comes from this strict world of, you know, standing on an X. You know, you know what your marks are, and when you're on stage, you're confined. But film acting is excruciating because they've measured, you know, your distance from your nose to the camera, and they've lit you a certain way, and you have like this much space to compress all of that in. It must be a release to let go of all that stuff and let it, you know, let it explode through music.
Yeah, it's I got hooked on it as a form of expression really early on, and then through the years with Zopa, being able to have more control over that. It took a while to let, you know, find the sound, you know, like I kind of had an idea of what I wanted songs to sound like, but it wasn't, it had to kind of evolve organically for me in a way. I mean, a trio is tricky, you know, because we're not like a singer-songwriter with a rhythm section. That's never been what we do. You know, it's three very distinctive musicians. I mean, especially Olmo and Elijah on bass and drums, like their approach to that, those instruments in a rock band are idiosyncratic and distinctive rather than just like making a beat. You know what I mean? It's really about making colors and, you know, dynamics.
Zopa is such a cool word, and I understand it means a kind of accord or agreement.
It means patience in Tibetan.
Okay. Yeah. I think I need to sign up for that course.
Patience? Yeah, that always helps.
It always helps.
Yeah.
You've committed very deeply in your personal life, Michael, to following that path. But patience in music, when you feel each other, you know, almost there, but not quite in the pocket. When is that moment when it clicks? And is that, you know, kind of like the rush that you're in it for?
We try not to really hammer out, you know, what each other are playing. And we sort of just let things flow until they sort of settle into something that just feels right. It's really a feeling thing. We're not overly composing things outside of the of practice, let's say.
Guys, just real quick off the top of your head, some of your favorite influences that you might want to point to.
I mean, Neil Young?
Yeah.
Yeah, Neil Young, for
the
sure.
Grunge father, for sure.
Carpenters.
Mm-hmm.
Really tight, really sad and beautiful music, yeah.
You know that song, Goodbye to Love?
Yeah.
That lead guitar solo blew my mind. You know, as a kid growing up, it's like, oh, the Carpenters. It's like that, you know.
Right,
like
it takes
mom
time
rock,
to get
right?
into it, yeah.
And then this thing comes out of nowhere. And it's like, it's, you know, it was like face melt Carpenters.
Is that their version of Superstar, Groupie, you know, is, I think, really, really
yeah.
beautiful.
Do you remember the Sonic Youth take on there?
Yes.
Was this record, If I Were a Carpenter.
Yeah.
And all did, the grunge
did,
people did
they
it.
They did
yeah.
Superstar.
Yeah.
Which was written by Leon Russell actually, sure. originally. And the first recording, Delaney and Bonnie, this is really good, too, of that song.
Well, Zopa clearly have a big beating musical heart, and they let the boundaries find themselves. They follow their heart and have a long and casual relationship with music. It seems like you guys are super relaxed because you're not playing the game. You know, there's nobody riding you to have, you know, a hit single and a video, and you've got to, you know, hit these marks. You're really doing it art for art's sake, love of the music, and that's got to be very liberating. Either for a guy who's got this whole other great big building built in professional life or guys who are, you know, interacting with him in the level balance of a trio.
The triangle.
The
right?
triad.
The triad. We do have some good videos, though, that my wife Victoria has made that if you haven't seen, especially Still Life and Red Sky are on YouTube, they're really, really cool.
There's a really one. Heavy one with, like, some stuff that goes down and some kind of drug bust or whatever.
Oh, I love that.
Well, that was a Scottish filmmaker named James Price from Glasgow, and he just contacted us on Instagram and said he wanted to make a video. We've never met in person. And he said he wanted to make a video for us over
during
there.
During the pandemic.
During the pandemic, and he shot this video in Glasgow for Diamonds Into Dust. We have a new one coming out this month for Love and Other Forms of Violence that Victoria directed.
Michael is very tight with Spike Lee, co-writer of you know, Summer of Sam, which played out, you know, like you could take a bus to where that happened from here.
Very close to here.
Did you have any feeling of that growing up, like, over the line in Mount Vernon?
Oh,
you would have
yeah.
been, like, you know, 11 or 12
or We had a big feeling of it. I mean, because
it was scary to
Mount
live
Vernon's
with that.
Very close yeah. to here, and I had grandparents that lived here in the Bronx, and Yeah. I mean, he lived, you know, he worked in New Rochelle and lived in Yonkers, which is Mount Vernon's right between those two towns. So he might have drove down my block. I don't know, you know, but we were all really kind of freaked out by this. It was very present in our lives at the time.
Yeah, it really was a kind of paranoia in this 1970 world. We're talking about Son of Sam and, you know, the shooter who targeted these unfortunate women and just kind of terrorized the community before these other gigantic terrors happened, you know, and totally reframed our expectation.
It was a strange summer and strange point in time in general. Like, you know, the sexual revolution had happened and they were like, women were single in their 30s and 40s, which wasn't the norm before, you know, and like disco was happening, punk was also happening. So there was this very, and it was pre, you know, AIDS.
Yeah.
And so there was a big, like, kind of very liberal sexuality that was going on, which we tried to incorporate in the movie because the killer was really was targeting women at first. So there was this very strange undercurrent of all these, you know, where we were culturally and morally and all that as a society, especially here.
And 77 was hot.
Hot.
It was the first really time hot. I can remember, like, changing clothes three times a day, you know.
Yeah, just, and the blackout and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right. That was another. So, boy, these are amazing times. I want to do a really quick, like movie and TV geek lightning round with Michael. We hit on Summer of Sam. You wrote 5 Sopranos episodes. Can you pick one of those children as a favorite?
Well, the first one, just because it was the first one, I guess. But the last one, I think, was about this birthday party that they threw for Carmela's father. But a lot of that took place, you know, was about this party. And it was kind of like this self-contained little story. I really like that one.
I liked
Marco Polo, it's called.
Right. Christopher. It's interesting. You have Christopher, you have Marco Polo. No. I loved Christopher for selfish reasons, because I'm very good friends with Fordham alumna Christine Petty, who played Karen Baccalieri.
Oh,
she couldn't defrost poor Steve Sciarrippa's Monocotta.
His ziti. His
right.
ex-wife, his first wife who passed away, her ziti, which was in the freezer post her death.
Post-mortem, yes. Right. But there were other wonderful things going on in that. And there was a subtext, too, in what I think people would call the greatest Sopranos episode of all of them, Pine Barrens. Are you in accord with that?
That's a good one, yeah. You know, whenever those guys could be fish out of water, it was pretty funny because they're so used to their own little world and the control they have in that world. And when they don't have control, they kind of freak out.
Speaking of fish out of water, that would be Jennifer Coolidge taking a dead weight dive into the drink in season 2 of White Lotus, where your cast pods didn't get a chance to interact very much. So you had F. Murray, which is awesome, and it must have been an amazing experience to work with him, but you missed Theo James and you missed Jennifer.
Yeah, but we were all together because we were all staying in the hotel and we all hung out together. So
it was
just like this strange theater troupe, you know, kind of stranded in Sicily. So it was really fun.
And then for, you know, so-called legitimate theater, because you've been off Broadway for so long and you and your wife have workshop things, but, you know, taking it to Broadway, doing Ibsen, it's heavy stuff. Did it fire a little ambition to do more in that line or whatever comes?
Yeah, it was great. It was really very rewarding to be, you know, doing a play like that, you know, and it was fun because we had a lot of young people coming out to see the play. It's a 150-year-old play that is very timely, and that was really rewarding, you know, to have young people come in to see this.
Awesome.
Some people, it was their first time seeing a play, you know, and they're seeing something that's 150 years old and still has relevance today to our world. And that was pretty cool.
Well, you've chosen as an homage some music that you didn't write, and you've put together, I think, a couple of Velvet Underground songs. One of them is real famous, and that would be Heroin. But tell me a little bit about the source of Ocean. Where does that come from?
Well, Ocean was originally a Velvet Underground. Lou Reed brought it, you know, into Velvet Underground. But then he recorded, see, to me, they're not Velvet Underground songs. They're more Lou Reed songs because he recorded a version of Ocean with different lyrics after the Velvet Underground on his.
And he had Heroin before the Velvet Underground.
Yes. And he also did recordings of Heroin, like live, like on Rock and Roll Animal as a solo act. There's different lyrics that for Ocean that he did after the Velvet Underground. I heard a demo of that, just him on acoustic guitar. And I just loved it. And we tried it towards the end of it, the chord, the ending chords of Ocean were the same chords of Heroin. So we just went into it and into Heroin. And then we did it live, and the audience really responded to it live. We did two shows back to back at the Mercury Lounge, and we played it both nights, and it was really very well received. So we just kind of kept it in the live repertoire. And then when we recorded the album, like, why don't we just, because we had been playing it so much, why don't we just do it for the album? And Lou was a big influence, on me personally and on the band as well. And, somebody who was, we were rehearsing one day, and he was in the next studio, and then he showed us these very kind of synth guitars that he was using. He was like revisiting Metal Machine music.
Metal Machine music.
Yeah, he did it at the Gramercy Theater, I guess like 2008 or 9. And, but he was a kind of a guiding force. So.
Must be interesting as an actor when you're doing covers. You're kind of inhabiting a personality or a character, but you also want to check that at the gate a little bit because you're really here to be free of playing a role. But you can't not, because there's that, like, your teenage self in the mirror with the moves kind of thing. Everybody goes back to that when you do a song, right?
Yeah, it's inherent in the song. It's in there, you know. His DNA's in there, so you're gonna bathe in that a little bit.
All right, bathing in Lou Reed DNA. Yeah. If they bottle and sell that, man, that's the next vaccine.
I'm down.
That might not be smart.
That's why we're here.
So it's two out of the Lou Reed songbook, Michael Imperioli and Zopa, Olmo Tai, Elijah Amatin. So great to have you guys making music in Studio A for FUV Live.
Thank you for having us.
Ocean and the waves down by the sea. Here comes the ocean and the waves, where have they been? Oh, swim tonight, my love. She's mad, my love. And the boat will drive me crazy. Malcolm has burned and sea. The cat's success and wreaks the madness. Makes you crazy, boy. Here come the waves down by the shore, washing the rocks that have been there for centuries and more. Here comes the ocean and the waves down by the sea. Here comes the ocean and the waves, where have they been? Castles that glow at night, towers above our fright. Well, God's decapitated. Malcolm lives on hate, sells your brains on a plate. Peace upon your mouth, but in the air come the waves down by the sea, washing the eyes of a man who have died. We'll be right back. try. Put a kingdom in that hand, 'cause it makes me feel like I'm a man. When I put a spike into my brain, will it turn me loose or fight the same? When I'm rushing on my run, and I feel just like Jesus' son, and I guess that I just don't know who I guess I just don't know.
On the way.
That was Zopa performing and in conversation at WFUV in New York City. A big thank you to the band for joining us in our studio and to Perry Serpa at Vicious Kid PR Records. Thanks to our WFUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara, Aaron Merriman, and Sage Rochetti. Our FUV live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producers for this episode were Ina Volovich and Liv Grant. Megan Suma is our executive producer. Our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV Live Sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday. You can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions on WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host, Paul Cavalcante.